Amen.
As pessoas me veem como objeto. Fale por mim.
Eu deixava de ser o que eu era para ser o que eles queriam. Fale por mim.
Os traumas do passado me perseguem. Fale por mim.
Eu não quero ter mais medo. Fale por mim.
Ninguém me vê, ninguém me ouve. Fale por mim.
Me sinto tão suja e sem valor. Fale por mim.
Me ajude a quebrar o meu silêncio. Fale por mim.
Minha família me mandou ficar calada. Fale por mim.
Não me deixe desistir de mim mesma. Fale por mim.
Eu preciso de justiça. Fale por mim.
Não quero mais carregar essa culpa. Fale por mim.
Me proteja.
Me defenda.
Me ajude a ter justiça.
Preciso de você.
Fale por mim.
So that video was made by the girls in our pink houses. It was their idea, their words, their voices, and a message to you. They knew that we were going to be showing this to people like yourselves. It was that we were going to be showing it here in England. The girls, many of them living in those situations until recently, now beginning to find hope, some quite well ahead on their road to recovery and to freedom, and yet knowing that there are many, many girls like them, thousands, even in their own town and region, that are still living in, trapped in this this nightmare of abuse and exploitation, being seen as objects. And the girls, knowing that we were going to be showing this to people like you, believing that people like you, people like us, often just because of who we are, where we happen to have been born, have a voice, and we can speak up for them, we can stand up for them, the girls that they know have no other hope whatsoever of being heard. So it's kind of a cry of help from those girls. The girls who are now, and I know that many of you have followed Indian dance over the years, the girls that you saw there, with a few exceptions, have found that freedom. and want to speak up for the girls themselves. So in a way, that's a, you see something of what God is doing there by seeing that video, because the girls themselves are being advocates, they're being empowered to speak up, but they're appealing to us as people who sometimes we don't feel that we have an influence, but we do. And we can make a difference, and we can make change. And as Christians, of course, we have there's a command for us to speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves. We read it in Proverbs 31, and we see it all the way through the Bible that we hold dear to us, that we are the ones who should be speaking up for those who cannot speak for themselves, who should be standing up for the oppressed and the vulnerable. And today the reasons are the same, and the girls there echo many of the commands that we read through the Bible. Speak for me because they've told me to keep quiet. And this is something we hear so often from the girls who spend years holding inside of them the memories of abuse because they're too afraid to speak about it. And they don't believe anything will be done when they do speak about it. Speak for me because I've stopped being who I was. And this is something we hear so often. We've stopped being the person I was to be who they wanted me to be. The person I was created to be, I'm not allowed to be that person. I don't feel like I've got worth. I don't feel like I have a purpose. I don't feel that there's a divine way for me, that God loves me. Because I've been made to be this. I'm being seen as an object, something that's simply, often from the moment they're born, being told that there's something to be swapped, they're a commodity, and they begin to believe that. And by the time they get to us, they're so broken and shattered. It's a challenge for us to break that perception of themselves, that they are something that they can use their body to get the things that they want, that they don't have any more value than the price that's been put on them. Speak for me because I want justice. You know, as Christians, if we don't exist to bring the oppressed out of oppression and break the chains of injustice, and what we're here for, you know, it's something that we read in passages all the way through the Bible. It's our command. It's something that God has called us to do, to be the voice of the voiceless. And there you see the girls speaking saying what they once believed, some of them that they still carry with them, but they certainly know that there are hundreds and thousands of other girls just like them who need to know, who need somebody to get alongside them, who are living in this the same hopelessness that they once lived, with nobody reaching out a hand and nobody telling them anything different to that. It's the kinds of lives and stories that we work with every day in our pink houses. Children girls who are children, they should be living the lives of children. They should be doing the things that girls of their age should be doing, but instead they come to us completely with their lives broken, their minds warped by what they've been through and been told, and their childhoods stolen from them. But I also want to encourage you that we can make a difference. And I know that you've been looking at why Jesus wants us to live life and live life in all its fullness. And I want to put this out, really, that we know that as Christians we need to be concerned for those, the vulnerable and the least in our society. And we can't turn a blind eye to suffering and injustice. It's something that when we say yes to Jesus, it's part of the package. Jesus says he wants us to live life in all its fullness. What does that mean? Well, I don't think it means being happy and without a care in the world and having a ball. I think it means living fulfilled lives, lives with a purpose. And that purpose can be changing the world. It can be changing somebody's life. I think when we can, as Christians, live a life in all its fullness by confronting this giant of injustice and impunity in parts of the world, actually making a change. And we can do it because God has empowered us to do it. We can do it through the power of God. With Him on our side, we can confront these giants. We can change societies. We can change lives. And it doesn't matter who we are. I mean, sometimes you might, I don't know where you work or who you are. You might be a teacher, you might be a caretaker, you might be someone who's retired, you might have a high-flying city job. You might think that you don't have enough knowledge to make a difference in a place like Brazil when you see these images, you hear these stories and these girls crying out. You might think you're too far away. You might think you're too insignificant. You don't have enough time. But I want to encourage you today that what you here in Bromsgrove Baptist Church have been doing in the small things that you've done for us has made a huge difference. That you here, you don't need to go off and on the BR116 and rescue girls from wherever they are like we sometimes do. And what our teams of women, they're on the front line of doing. You can make this change and live this fulfilled life in Christ, a life of building the kingdom of God, because Jesus came to build a kingdom here on earth and calls us to do it. And that command of speaking for those who cannot speak themselves back there in the times of the Proverbs is just as relevant today to us Christians. We can make that happen and live this fulfilled life in Christ wherever you are, by the things that you do, because of being empowered by this God who calls us. So, how many of you wrote a letter to the Brazilian ambassador recently? I know that here and in other campaigns as well, a lot of people have written letters. Last week, Charlotte and I went to the Brazilian embassy, and we turned up there with two things. First, as we've been going around on our travels with this film and some other things, we've asked people to sign a declaration calling on the Brazilian government to do something about this epidemic of child prostitution on the BR116, a country which has the best laws in the world for children, but doesn't implement them. Calling on the Brazilian government to make this huge tragedy, which is often goes untold and unseen, is often hidden away, often on purpose, to confront it and make a change. And so we turned up at the Brazilian embassy with the 500 signatures from people all around the country. And then we also talked about the letters, because the ambassador, since our campaign, has received about 1,000 letters on behalf of one girl in our pink house in Cândido Sales, who was raped. She was raped when she was 14. Nothing was done about it. We then discovered that the police, in the police station that should have been dealing with it, there was a relative of one of these girls. There was a relative of the rapist there, and he made sure nothing happened with this case. So we asked people to write a letter, and that letter went to the ambassador. So we turned up there, and he said, "Listen, we've had all these letters, and we've taken a note of them. We've sent them to Brazil. They've gone to the Foreign Office in Brazil. The Foreign Office has sent all these letters to the local department of the Foreign Office in the state of Bahia, where it's the same state as Cândido Sales. And this has been brought to the attention of the Department of Security, which coordinates the police efforts there. Just a few people at home writing letters. And we're going to see what happens now. That's making a difference wherever you are. And he took our bundle of signatures and said, these will be sent to the children's minister in Brazil. And he said, the fact that this has come from here, from the United Kingdom, and from Brazil's embassy in the United Kingdom, adds so much extra weight. So you might not feel like you have the power, the influence to change, but you do. And this is, and the girls here in their message are counting on you to do this. We had a huge victory recently with another letter writing campaign. I don't know how many of you might have written a letter about a mayor who over decades was abusing young girls, using his power and his money to buy girls, to buy the silence of those who sometimes every now and again accused him. We decided to say to show the police in this town, who didn't really want to do anything about it after he'd fled. So over 30 years, this mayor had abused. He'd got off a number of times. He'd fled a few times and then come back and been re-elected. He just thought he could carry on abusing without any sense of justice. And then when another case came up and the prosecutor decided to charge him, he fled again, thinking that would all happen again. And so we got people in the UK to write letters to the local police chief. And again, he received over 1,000 letters from all over the world. And when we went to see him, we didn't really know. It was the first time we'd ever done this kind of thing. So we arrived at the police station, and he came with this huge bundle of letters. He said, I've been getting letters from people all around the world. We're talking small towns in Brazil where they don't really, even people in Brazil have never heard of them. Some of them are on the map. They don't think that anyone's looking at what's going on. And yet he came out with these thousands of letters with stamps from New Zealand, Australia, the UK, Ireland, everywhere. And he said, what I've done, I've attached this to the case, and then he sent it to his local police chief in another town, and that was sent to another police chief in another town. Eventually arrived in the state capital, the police headquarters in the state capital, and they assigned, because of your letters, an investigator just to track this man down. They ended up flying to the Amazon and finding him in a ranch in the Amazon jungle and bringing him back. And I remember the day they called me and said, we've caught him, and it's all because of Menina Dancer. Can you please come to the press conference where he's going to be brought out in front of the media, handcuffed? And so we went to the place, Wally and I, who you've met, and in front of the press, the police said, this man was only captured because of the people around the world writing letters. He went on to be sentenced to 70-something years. But then we got you to, because we know how Brazil works, and we know how he's paid people off in the past. And in one case, the day he was due to be sentenced was suddenly that the case was dropped. We asked you to write letters to the judge in the case as well to make sure he really was put down. He's still in prison. And I'll have the pleasure next month, I think, when I go over there, I'm going to write a book about this, to go and visit him in his jail cell, a man who abused. I went to write a story about this for the Daily Mail. I work as a journalist. And literally every street in this town, there were women who were now in their 20s and 30s who had been traumatized by abuse in the hands of the local mayor, who just thought he could do it and no one would see it for years and years and years. This is the power of, well, it's people power in a way, but I want to encourage you that this is something that you did. This is an effect that you can have. You can be the answer to these girls' cries for help. Speak for me. You know, when you hear that, a girl in Brazil saying, speak for me, well, what can we do? You can make a difference. And I know many of you do. I know many of you also support us financially. I know many of you have adopted a kilometre of the BR116. Again, adopting a kilometre is a way not only of helping maintain our projects and reach more girls, but it's a way of speaking for the girls, because as you drive along the BR116 and see these pink ribbons with foreign people's names attached to each pink, written on each pink ribbon, the people in those regions see that, well, they're being noticed, that there are people who don't accept this, and the girls themselves also see that there are people around the world who are standing up for them and supporting them and want to see them well. That has had a huge effect on our girls. I want to encourage you also by telling you the stories of many of these girls who, when I first arrived in Brazil on that night, for those who don't know, Menina Dança started about 10 years ago when I, as a journalist, was in Brazil on something else, and we found at 2 o'clock in the morning, a young girl standing on the side of the motorway who was 11 years old. We stopped, we talked to her, and she told us how she was selling her body to truck drivers, that her family were waiting back home for the money, and she spent every night going up and down, being abused by men for the equivalent of a few pounds. This was something that I'd never heard about in Brazil, and I'd been in Brazil before. It was something that was shocking, something that, as I searched for this, hadn't been reported, hadn't been told. And as we went and investigated further, we found entire towns where hundreds of girls were involved in abuse and exploitation. The first one we went to was a town called Medina, where we found mothers selling their children, fathers building rooms on the side of their houses where their 12-year-old daughters could service their clients, girls who were simply disappearing every week, girls of 11, 12, 13, taking trucks up and down the just on the side of the motorway and never coming back, or going missing for weeks and weeks on end, and nobody running after them, nobody caring. This is the situation that many of these girls were in a number of years ago. And yet in Medina we're seeing an incredible movement of God taking place in their lives. As these girls begin to come to our pink houses, where we use dance as a way of reaching them, as a way of raising their self-esteem, as a way of showing them how much value and potential they have, alongside other activities that are very female, girl-orientated. Conversation circles where we talk very openly about their problems, individual sessions and conversations and friendship. They're in the pink house, a safe place, perhaps the safest place for these girls in their town, where there are just women there working with them, who are accepting them, embracing them, constantly building them up and empowering them. And what we see is that these girls are changed in amazing ways. They go out onto the streets and dance and speak to the local people, telling them that they need to see them differently. They're not anymore the objects that they thought they were. And we're seeing a really transformative effect in Medina, also in Cândido Sales and the other towns that we're just beginning now, where people are beginning to have their eyes opened. Where in Medina, we managed to get a day enshrined in the town's calendar forever, which is a day of the fight against child sexual exploitation, every December the 6th. You know, so many different things happening, and girls who are being changed. One particular girl, I'll tell you about her quickly before I pass on to the girls who will tell them you themselves, is a girl called Yandra. A girl, she was 16 years old when she arrived at the house, and she'd been, without telling anybody, abused by her own father abused by her own father for 10 years every single day. We found out about this girl because her uncle had heard about Her uncle read her mobile phone and found out what was going on. And this girl's, instead of helping her, this girl's face and photo was spread on social networks all over town, kind of as a way of putting her down. And so we reached out to Yandra and brought her into the Pink House. And within a few days, our girls, who today are our advocates, they're the ones who embrace the girls and tell them what their lives could become. She was beginning to open up. We told her about God and about God's fatherly love and that he wanted justice for her. She didn't quite believe it, but she decided to report her father to the police. And we supported her through that whole time. We got her mother on board, her mother who'd allowed the abuse to take place, but who'd herself been abused and didn't think there was any other way. That this was how, as we see in many different lives and families in Medina and other towns, the mothers just think that this is the cycle, this is how it's supposed to be. And so it's never broken, and it just goes on from generation to generation. She went through some really difficult times of self-harming, of wanting to commit suicide, as we supported her, as she went to give statements, as she didn't quite believe that justice would ever be done, as she didn't make any commitment to God because she couldn't believe that that kind of God existed. That was in the March, and in the September, her father was convicted and sent to prison for 42 years. It was the first time in Medina that anyone had been convicted for an act of any type of violence against a child. And I remember the day that this happened, and they called me, and she was crying. It's like the whole weight of injustice had been taken off her shoulders. Within a month, she'd been baptized because she suddenly accepted this God we'd been telling her about, that she didn't quite believe would do that for her and would be on her side. And last year, this is actually the girl in the white is Yandra. The girl, the woman next to her is Christiane, who's been in the UK recently. We couldn't manage to get here. That's our dance teacher on the side there. And this is our social worker. This group of women, amazing, amazing, dedicated, committed women working on the front line with these girls who just came around and embraced her like they do every single girl. This is not any ordinary photo. This is her wedding day. Because Yandra found her true love within the church and was able to choose for herself who she loved and got married. And Christiana, who's been here in the UK in November, said this was the happiest day of her life. It was like a mother. She felt like a mother marrying a daughter. It was the first Pink House wedding we've ever had, and hopefully one of many. And today she's happy. Oh, yeah, there's the trauma of the past. There's those things that happened. But she's worked through that, and she's working through that, and as many, many other girls are. Look, I could tell you about so many different girls who've experienced hope, who've grabbed hold of opportunities and hope, who've accepted Jesus into their lives, or who have begun to understand the love of God in their lives and begun to make that real in their lives and have seen real change. But I don't want to tell you about them because it's much more powerful for the girls themselves to tell you. So there's a video to show now. We asked a number of our girls, some of them who are still in the Pink House, some of them who have left and have gone on to sometimes move to towns, sometimes have become 18 and got a job and stuff, if they could tell us what Minina Dancer did for them, what it meant, what it means for them. So we asked them, could you please record a video on your mobile phone and send it to us? But with each video that these girls sent in, I cried because I never imagined that we'd have such an effect on their lives as they had and as they testified to. We knew of some cases, but we didn't realize that Minion Dancer was everything to these girls, that they credited Minion Dancer for completely changing the direction of their lives. from that cycle of violence and prostitution and poverty that they never thought they'd ever get out of, into a life of purpose and freedom and empowerment and hope and a new family. And some of them had babies. Some of them have one girl started in the Navy, a career in the Navy. And they all credit what's happening in their lives with the intervention at exactly the right time of the Pink House, these amazing women who reached out to them and told them there's a different way. So for those of you who have been following our work, this is an incredible video. For those of you who have given, you can see really what you're helping to achieve. And we want to do a lot more. Should we show that video now?
Olá, eu sou Ana Brígida.
Oi, gente, o meu nome é Emily.
Olá, meu nome é Daniele.
Oi, meu nome é Rayane.
Meu nome é Bruna.
Olá, meu nome é Graziella.
Meu nome é Micaele.
Olá, meu nome é Isabela.
Oi, gente, meu nome é Nathalie Evelyn.
Oi, meu nome é Maxiele.
E eu vim falar um pouco da minha vida que a ONG Mina Dança fez comigo. Até hoje eu agradeço, né? Porque se não fosse a minha dança, eu tava nessa vida até agora.
Por não ter deixado eu desistir dos meus sonhos e por ter me mostrado que eu sou capaz de ir muito além, que eu sou capaz de fazer o que eu querer, só basta eu correr atrás dos meus sonhos.
Eu só quero agradecer, só quero parabenizar as pessoas que trabalham e dizer que vocês fizeram toda a diferença no que eu sou hoje. Eu só sou o que eu sou hoje por causa do Menina Dança.
Eu chegava triste e saía feliz. Porque as pessoas que estão lá dentro, os profissionais da ONG, eles fazem a gente se sentir bem.
Menina Dança não é simplesmente uma ONG, mas é um abrigo onde nós todas aprendemos e é onde nós todas procuramos seguir o caminho certo, tirando muitas meninas das drogas, de prostituição. A Menina Dança, ela vem nos ensinando a cada dia mais que não precisamos viver somente disso, que há uma coisa mais forte, há uma coisa bem melhor a nos proporcionar na vida.
Me mostraram que eu sou capaz, sempre me deu força e são uma família para mim. Eu só tenho a agradecer.
Agradeço muito mesmo a Menina Dança por ter me ajudado muito, bastante. Fazer que se não fosse o projeto até hoje eu não sabia se eu poderia estar aqui. Eu podia ter sido abusada, podia estar morta.
Nós estamos na dança muito bom. E sem dizer que a gente está aqui, a gente se sente protegida, se sente amada, se sente valorizada. A gente se sente uma pessoa assim, incrível, entendeu?
Pra mim, eu levo no coração, não tenho nem palavras pra descrever o que foi o projeto Menina Dança Minha.
Bom, quando eu tinha 14 anos, eu era garota de programa, eu fazia prostituição com 14 anos. Eu resolvi ir para essa vida por motivos, porque quando eu pedi algo ao meu pai, ele não me dava. Aí, às vezes, eu já via algumas pessoas fazendo, né? Assim, eu pedi, se eu pedir, meu pai não dá. Aí, vende seu corpo. Aí, acabei fazendo esse conselho. Alguns homens me ligavam, bora agora, e eu ia. Bom, aí nesta hora eu ia para um motel, vários motéis, o principal era fora de Medina. E também porque eles me davam R$100, R$200, ao máximo R$350.
Eu perdi a minha mãe, eu tinha 5 anos de idade. Minha mãe faleceu, sem contar para mim e para minha família quem era o meu pai. Convivi com a minha avó e meu avô. Eu, com 11 anos de idade, comecei a ser abusada pelo meu tio. Eu, sem ter coragem de contar pra ninguém da minha casa, eu saí de casa. Comecei a me envolver com gente errada, comecei a usar drogas. Meu avô falou que não me queria mais em casa. Eu fui pra rua.
Quando eu tava na rua, as pessoas falavam que eu não tinha futuro. Que eu nunca ia pra frente, né? Eu já tava lá embaixo, já. Eu nunca ia pra cima, não. E eu pensei, não.
Passei por muitas fases difíceis, fases de se cortar, fases de depressão.
Eu passava por problemas, mas eu não conseguia falar com ninguém. E já tinha muita coisa que eu passava que eu não conseguia falar com ninguém. Eu tinha medo.
Eu conheci o projeto A ONG Minha Dança, aí eu que se toquei que eu tinha valor, entendeu? Porque eles, a ONG Minha Dança me ajudaram muito. Se não fosse a ONG Minha Dança, eu estaria nessa vida ganhando dinheiro e hoje eu procuro um trabalho melhor do que eu vender o meu corpo, porque o meu corpo é muito valioso. Eu tinha que valorizar mais o meu corpo.
Comecei. Para mim, a menina dança é uma minha família que eu nunca tive.
Eles me ajudaram bastante. Eu estou aqui, né? E já estou no primeiro ano do ensino médio. E peço, né, que as meninas que estiverem no mundo aí também, que quiser vir para casa logo, nós vamos estar de braço aberto para elas.
Eu tenho certeza que vocês vão fazer mais ainda por mais meninas. O que vocês fazem é muito lindo, é muito maravilhoso.
E depois que eu entrei no Minha Dança, as meninas de lá me ajudaram muito com isso, sobre falar, para desabafar. E elas me ajudaram muito, muito mesmo.
Agradeço a Menina Dança por tudo. Eu tenho uma filha, se não fosse por eles, minha filha não tinha nascido. E pensei em aborto. Graças a eles, tenho minha filha agora. E agradeço eles por tudo. Eles me ajudou a superar meus traumas, me ajudou a ser quem eu sou hoje.
Sou muito grata mesmo por a Menina Dança, por ter me ajudado na pior fase da minha vida. Eu só tenho a agradecer a vocês.
Na Menina Dança, eu aprendi também sobre o amor de Deus para conosco. Por quê? Muitas meninas perderam o valor depois que foram usadas, abusadas. E hoje eu posso falar que o amor de Deus com a gente ali dentro é muito grande. O amor de Deus, ele é perfeito, ele é magnífico. E Deus, ele tem sim algo melhor para cada um de nós.
Eu tenho certeza que vocês vão fazer mais ainda por mais meninas. O que vocês fazem é muito lindo, é muito maravilhoso.
Menina Dança, eu amo vocês, muito obrigada por tudo, por ter me tirado dessa vida, que eu agradeço muito a Cristiana, a Letícia, a todas as meninas, diretores, os de fora, muito obrigada mesmo, tá? Um beijo pra vocês.
So from those small beginnings, we're seeing surprising as every time the dimensions that this thing is taking, and every step of the way seeing God's hand on each new thing that happens. We've got these four projects now. We had the two projects, and then a few years ago we did a walk. We decided to walk from Aegina down the motorway, 170 kilometers. I walked that, and it nearly finished me off. Over 6 days, but we had a team going into each house as we were walking down, tying the pink ribbons on each kilometer sign, and the teams were going into the towns as we walked, going to schools, going to the squares. And after they'd done presentations, there were a number of towns where they did the presentation at school, and then girls would come up to the team afterwards and ask for help, tell them about abuse that was happening to them, saying, "You need to help us right now." After that walk, we decided that we needed to start some new project as quickly as possible. So we decided to start in Padre Pariza, the third one there. And that house, we've been working there since January this year. But we've been given a house by the local church. And this house used to be a creche for the children of prostitutes. A number of decades ago. And it's right in what used to be the red light district, right next to the motorway. And that place, which was once used so the women would be doing their prostitution and they'd leave their children in that place where the church would give them food. And today we're going to be giving that house a new story as well by being that beacon of hope for the young girls involved in these things. Katuji, the fourth house you see there was also one of those places where we just, where so many girls came up to us pleading for us to help them. But because we didn't have enough resources, we just thought, well, we can't start two projects. You know, it's going to be years before we start the fourth project. And then in April last year, we got a knock on the door of our office in Belo Horizonte, as we have an office in the state capital. And who was it? It was the mayor of that town, Katuji. And we hadn't mentioned anything to the mayor of Katuji. But he came in and he sat down and said, I want you to start a project in my town. I'm concerned about the girls who are losing their innocence in my town. I've heard so much about what you've been doing. Please come. We'll give you a house. We'll pay your bills. We'll give you professionals. Just come and do what you've been doing in the other places. So our project in Katuji started in July last year and is already doing an amazing work with some really needy girls. Again, in these small towns, beacons of light and hope in places where often there's never been any social projects, places that are so remote, no one cares, no one knows, and where the girls have lived for generations without anybody reaching out a hand saying, it doesn't have to be like this. You have valor. That was half Portuguese. You have value. you can live a different life. As well as that, we've been seeing other amazing things happen. We've recently been approached by a haulage company, which is the second biggest haulage company in South America. They want to create a group of what they call truck drivers for good. And they want us to train their truck drivers to be truck drivers for good, who will know exactly what to do when they see a girl on the side of the road and who will pass on that message to other truck drivers along their journey. Again, really, who would have imagined that? 10 years ago, when I first saw that girl on the side of the road and heard so many terrible stories and met so many girls who were in darkness and complete hopelessness. And then just going back to the embassy, the vice ambassador, when we met with him, said, when you find a case in any of these towns, send it to me. Get people to write letters to me, and I'll make sure that those letters get to the police chief of that small town. You can't underestimate the power in a small, tiny town of a police chief receiving letters from the UK embassy from hundreds of citizens of the UK. So much is happening. God is doing so many things. But we've only got four towns, and we already know of many other towns where girls are too far away from a pink house. And we want to do so much more. And so how can you help us? Well, the first thing is, keep in touch with Roz, and when there's campaigns to write letters or to sign things or to do different types of activities we need from you, get involved in that way. The other thing you can do is what some of you already do, which is to adopt a kilometre or give monthly, because if you imagine all these towns, a lot of these houses are rented, we have staff salaries. And the way that we continue doing this work and reaching more girls is to pay salaries and to know that we have an amount per month coming in. We only have it's probably about 20 kilometres left of this 300 kilometre stretch to adopt. Adopt a kilometre is a way of supporting us, but partnering with us on a monthly basis constantly. And also, next month, this is actually the chance to adopt your kilometre now, because next month we're going to go onto the motorway and tie pink ribbons onto the kilometre signs. So, if you want to adopt a kilometre, there are a few. The remaining ones are on the magnetic thing, swirly thing at the back. And you can choose your kilometre, choose number 73, 76, and you can take away today a magnet to put on your fridge. Not only you get magnets, in a few weeks you'll get a mug with your name on it and your kilometre sign. Okay, so it's one of the 300 kilometres between the top house and the bottom house. So you'll be able to get up in the morning, look at your fridge and drink your coffee and remember the girls of the BR116. It's a great way to remember and to pray. But also it has an added effect, because next month we'll be going to your kilometre sign with a pink ribbon with your name written on it, and we'll tie it onto the sign. And that's also a way of speaking out for these girls, showing the people in that region that you and many others are concerned, care and want to see change, and value them for who they are. So please consider that, the standing order forms are at the back there, and also you'll hear how your contribution is helping to change lives. You can, wherever you are, even if you never leave Bromsgrove, make a difference in the lives of girls like these. Not only that, but these girls are counting on us, because as far as they're concerned, we're the only ones who they can count on. There's no one else who's shown interest. And so please continue to be with us, continue to pray, fundraise when you can. Every single penny goes to, is stretched more than you can ever imagine to do the most. If you want to stay in touch and receive our emails, fill in one of these cards as well. And I just want to also just thank the church here for all you've done, for being so faithful, for getting so involved in lots of different things. I know some of you have had put the piggy banks and put your change in. It's making a difference. It's these small things, consistent things, and that not only allow us to continue our work, but show these girls that they have worth, and they deserve so much more. One final video, it's very quick, promise. But when I first met Layla, this 11-year-old girl on the side of the road, I was with someone called Dean Brody, who was a Canadian country singer. Some of you might know the story. Dean Brody is a very, very famous Canadian country singer these days. But after that meeting, when we met this girl and had this earthquake effect, and we saw for the first time a girl selling her body on the side of the road, he went home and wrote a song called Layla's Song. Okay. The girls that you saw in the first film want to show you what happens when you speak up for them in this last film. But Dean, and they wanted to dance a dance to Dean Brody's song. So what you're going to see here as we finish is Dean Brody introducing his song, singing it, and then the girls dancing to it. And their way of showing you what happens when you stand up for them and speak out for them.
Hey guys, thank you so much for coming out today and supporting Menina Danza. They do amazing and great work, and I know that if you're part of it, you understand that, and if you've just joined, if you're just thinking about it, it's amazing. It's amazing to see the changes that have happened in the years and in the lives of these girls. So thank you so much. Years ago, I met a girl named Leela on the side of the road. I think it was probably 1 o'clock. And I was shocked at her size, at her age, and that she had to do this for a living. It just broke my heart. Came back to Canada and wrote this song called Leela's Song. It was like this. Blinding headlights, the smell of the black diesel fumes. It ain't no lie, for a child as innocent as you. You're a lamb among lions. They take your diamonds and toss you to the side of a lonely road in the rain. And you stand there torn like a rag doll as tears streak your face. Holy love, the world has forgot you, but I know.